Accessing library computer data.
And to make sure history never forgets the name Enterprise.
Hey everybody, welcome to the Penske Podcast. If you haven't tuned in before, this is a podcast where we are running through all 178 episodes of Star Trek The Next Generation, giving our thoughts and feelings about each and every one. Right now we're up to Season 3, Episode 12. It's called The High Ground. It was directed by Gabriel Beaumont, written by Melinda Snodgrass, and it aired back on January 29th, 1990. Wonderful, wonderful period, those 90s. Everyone was happy. There was a lot of money. The dot-com bubble hadn't come yet. Anyway, in this episode, a crew member of the Federation starship Enterprise is taken hostage by terrorists who hope Federation involvement will help them win concessions for their cause. It's an allegory for the strife in Northern Ireland. I'm going to be joined by Clay to talk about this one. Clay is coming over to talk about the high ground right after this.
We have been unable to detect a signal from her communicator. Either it has been deactivated or she is being held in a shielded location.
Why her?
Sir, I believe she was the intended target of the abduction.
Why would they want to take a Federation hostage? Their fight doesn't involve us.
It does now.
Hey, everybody. Welcome back. How's it going? Welcome to the podcast. Hope you enjoyed that audio clip. Hope you enjoyed the introduction. Hope you're enjoying the show. Anyway, I'm back. Clay's with me. Clay, how are you?
I'm good. I'm happy to be back on my podcast.
Listen to the last episode to understand why now Clay owns all intellectual property about this podcast. But anyway, let's be honest, Wes.
They listen to all my episodes.
They do, yeah. They're the highest rated, highest listened to. So look at those numbers. Anyway, I don't know if this episode, even with your presence, is going to be that much listened to. We're talking about the high ground. And I'm going to bury the lead and just say I hate this fucking episode. I think it's terrible. What do you think?
Interesting. I thought it was really good.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
I guess we'll have a lot to talk about.
Yeah, this should be good.
Okay, it's where we came to a sort of middling agreement on the last one. We both gave it threes. Yeah, I'll give my sentence about this episode, which you can respond to. This one felt like a college freshman had taken like history 101 or something and wrote a TV spec script about terrorism.
Okay. Yeah. I agree with that.
Okay. What'd you like about it?
Well, I think I was just surprised at what it was going for. I am a sucker for interesting or edgy themes more than, like, you know, plot stuff.
Yep.
And so I was really impressed that that Star Trek The Next Generation was doing an episode that was basically a takedown of the United States government. Even if it was, like, pretty heavy-handed. I don't know. It was just something about it. I really appreciated that they were, you know, going to the lengths that they were going.
As a way of backstory, this is somewhat clearly modeled on the Irish conflict. This episode was actually banned in Britain and Ireland when it aired.
Was it really?
Yeah.
That's interesting.
Which is funny because it is so uncontroversial.
Except
for the one scene, which I'll point out later, which I think is what this episode was trying to do, but I don't know if it really succeeds. I don't know if it didn't succeed because of rewrites or whatever. It was banned in Britain, banned in Ireland, which is funny because I consider what they're saying to be so ham-fisted in, like, everybody is right all the time that as to ultimately mean nothing. I just really, when I think of this episode, I think of people speaking only in platitudes, saying things like, it's hard to even come up with one example, but they'd be like, terrorism has never defeated love. Like, people just say things like that to each other, and it's like, wow, this is really something.
Yeah, no, what does Picard say? Something about the answer has never come from the barrel of a gun or something like that.
Yeah, he has that line. He also says something like strength has sometimes strength is not enough when dealing with terrorism, which is a weird line.
Yeah, that was really weird. I didn't even know what that was supposed to mean. Like, what stance is that taking in anything?
Right, and that line's funny because in context of what he's talking about, it doesn't really fit. And it feels like they just wanted to put it in because the writer was like, I'm so clever. Like, I understand terrorism. I'm going to have Picard just fucking say this line, which is weird. I can appreciate liking what this story is trying to do. I just don't think it really works. Let's get a little bit of trivia out of the way. This is written by Melinda Snodgrass, who is quickly becoming one of my most overrated Trek writers. She wrote Measure of a Man, which everyone seems to love, and I didn't really care for. She wrote this one. She's wrote a bunch of other ones. But yeah, it's just the Enterprise is trying to help this group on Rudia 4. A bomb goes off. Crusher is kidnapped.
Which apparently is the planet of Janet Jackson's Rhythm Nation.
Yes, yeah.
Judging by the costumes they wear.
You know, I will give you one thing. I really did like their uniforms that the security guards wear.
The Daft Punk security guards?
they're very, very angular, but very very unique looking. I kind of like the set pieces in this one. Like, I thought the alien planet was kind of cool looking, for whatever reason.
Yeah, I think it was the last one that opened on a really nice matte shot, but it also seems the same.
Yeah.
Go ahead. So.
Anyway, Crusher's kidnapped. She's kidnapped by a man, like, totally unironically named Finn.
I did not even put together the Irish thing. I don't know if I just wasn't paying attention or something, but it didn't even occur to me.
Yeah, He's developed this technology, which is probably the coolest thing about it, where they can sort of teleport and people can't track where they're going. Very like night crawlery.
Right.
Yes. And then they find Crusher. Picard gets captured. They storm the place. The guy dies. Everyone lives happily ever after. And the entire time, people are just saying platitudes to each other.
So I have a question.
Yeah, go ahead.
Does Crusher outrank Worf?
Yes.
Really?
Yep.
I didn't know that.
I believe she's like a commander level.
Oh. Yeah, because I was surprised when she was ordering him around after that bomb went off.
Yeah, he gave her a real stink eye, too. I wouldn't have... she should have just backhanded him right there for that. Yeah. The other funny thing about Worf and Data at the beginning is when Crusher gets kidnapped, they do absolutely nothing to stop that from happening. They just watch it. They just watch it disappear.
Yeah. Well, it's another instance, much like the last episode of, like implied super speed that actually on screen seems really slow.
Yeah. 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 No, it's the, For what I liked about this episode, it was actually probably, I think the, like, what the episode is about could have been done a little bit better. I don't think it's executed particularly well. I did really enjoy the thing where their transportation, which makes them powerful, is actually killing them.
Right, right.
That's a nice little trade-off. And I also love the fact that the minute this guy beamed onto Picard's ship, Picard just laid him out with a haymaker.
Oh, that was awesome. That was awesome. You know, I feel like, so this episode and the last episode have kind of made me think, I feel like they're losing the narrative thread with Picard's character a little bit.
I totally agree with you. Go ahead, though. You say, yeah.
Well, he's just, I don't know. I don't know if it's just that both of these episodes weren't really Picard episodes, so having him be a background player is kind of awkward.
Yep.
But there's just something about his character that seems off.
Yeah, I mean, I totally agree with you. He seems not decisive enough to be the character that I'm sort of used to of him. I don't know if he's sort of in a mid-season slump, although I feel like they haven't focused on... I feel like there at this point there haven't been as many Picard-centric episodes as you would think there would be in this show.
Yeah.
Maybe the writers grow to like him, just like they grow to like Data, and this he'll get more of a focus later on.
Right.
But he's really passive in these ones, and it does. I don't think it suits what the captain of this ship is supposed to be about. Just doesn't work for me.
Yeah, I agree.
I think we're also in a mid-season slump right now in terms of episodes.
Yeah.
I think season started off really strongly, and now we're sort of cresting a little bit.
This episode and the last one, I think both did a pretty decent job of involving everybody.
Yeah.
Which, you know, which is tough because you've got, you know, as we've talked about before, you've got a cast where there's like 14 people in the opening credits. And, you know, some weeks Worf is just going to stand behind a desk for 40 minutes.
Right, yeah.
But I thought they did a pretty good job of involving everybody in some fashion. Like in the last episode, you know, they got Troy in there. Like, honestly, not to go back to the last episode too much, but
sure.
I thought that was going to be a Troy-centric episode because she was, like, the first person they spent time with from the crew.
Whose episode do you think it is? I think it still is hers, but she's not nearly as prominent as she could have been.
In that episode, I would say it's more of the Jingo Flaggy Flags.
Oh, okay.
What is his name? Dindog?
Roga Danar.
Yeah, Rinnie Ding Dong.
Rinnie Ding Dong.
Anyway, like, you know, because in this episode, it's clearly a Crusher episode from, like, the first shot or something.
Yes.
Which is nice, because I think this is the first Crusher episode I've actually done.
I think it might be the first Crusher episode ever.
Is it really?
It might be. I can't think of anything. I mean, because she has other roles that she's kind of a strong player in, but I think this one is purely her episode.
Yeah. I think that's what actually was making me like it. For better or worse, I can overlook a lot of quote-unquote bad stuff.
Yep.
If there are good ideas or interesting ideas present.
Sure.
And I liked that it was a Crusher episode because I hadn't seen one of those before, and I thought she was pretty good. I mean, I think she could have done a little bit more, but at least at the beginning, I thought she was pretty good.
I think the script lets her down because I don't understand her turn towards the end where she gets like Stockholm syndrome and starts being sympathetic to this guy that I don't understand what's sympathetic about him. He's totally he has like no charisma. He seems to be killing children, which is kind of a problem. And his cause isn't even that interesting. It's like, they didn't give us independence 70 years ago, so I'm going to fuck them up. And the one other weird thing, before you continue, did you find it crazy that the woman general who Riker seemed to be yelling at the entire episode said that there are only 200 members of this resistance group?
I must have completely missed. Did she say that?
She said it. I watched it twice. She goes, there are only 200 members, and they have some people on our side who help them occasionally. And it's like,
I feel like this should it should be able to clean this up in a weekend then.
Right, exactly. Once you find their cave, just go in there and like fireball.
They all seem to hang
them.
Out in the same cave.
It's just I didn't understand why they limited it to like have it be an equal sized continent or something, you know? Like it didn't make any sense. I don't know. But anyway, go ahead with what you were saying about Crusher.
Well, yeah, I think Pulaski probably would have done better in this episode.
She probably would have, yeah.
She would have given more pushback, you know, because Crusher, I like Crusher, but she's a very, you know,
she has a better bedside manner than Pulaski does, which makes for a less interesting character.
Yeah, but she's not really flashy.
No,
which
isn't.
Is not, you know, which is not necessarily a bad thing, but yeah, so I liked that it was a Crusher episode. I liked for once that Riker didn't immediately try to bone the female leader of the planet he was on. Thank God.
He did not. He was. I liked his. It's just sort of like the limitations of filming it. Like, there's a scene where he's standing out in the city square with that woman, and like they're arresting children, and Riker goes, "This is no way to live." And it's just like glaring out at things. It's just it felt very melodramatic. And his scenes, he was lit very darkly. That woman's office apparently has like one 50 watt light bulb in the corner.
Well, there was that that whole last sequence takes place in the cave, and it's all pretty well lit until that one like medium shot of Riker and the girl, where it was all of a sudden lit by David Fincher.
He could have put his fist. The same with their plan, right? They're like, oh, they don't have any light down there. If we blow out the power, they won't be able to see. They blow out the power and absolutely nothing changes. It is exactly
the only thing that changes is Crusher gets cut off in the middle of her if we die tonight, I have to tell you my true feelings.
Oh, I know. What a tease. I thought that was a little bit shitty of the episode.
Now, this is a complete tangent, but have they, unless I've completely missed it because I've only been watching a handful of these episodes, have they been dropping Crusher and Picard relationship things?
No, the most you see of them, because obviously she was missing the second season, the most you see is that whenever Picard is in 10 forward, he's likely to be sitting with Crusher. That's the only thing I've noticed, but that doesn't really imply anything. This is the first callback to that relationship in a very long time.
Assuming that's what it was. I mean, it was so, like, she didn't even start that sentence in the way that implied that she was going to, tell him that she loved him or something. It was like, listen, if this is our last day on Earth, there's something I need to tell you. You really need to pay me back the money that you owe me. So it was like what?
Right. I have an experiment running on the Enterprise. If you get back and you turn the thing off,
exactly. I left the dog in the car. I didn't crack the windows. If you could please just take him out of the car when you get back there. It was very unromantic. No emotion to it.
Anyway,
so some of the other things that I thought were interesting were, I really liked that little piece where Data was talking to Picard, and Data was talking about the upsides of terrorism as a last resort. I really liked that.
That was the scene I mentioned earlier where I thought we'd talk about. I'm glad you brought it up. That, to me, is, I think, what this episode was trying to get to, and I think it was rewritten into not being that.
A dimensional jump can create subspace pressure modulation, Captain. By setting up a magnetosphere echogram that can monitor each of their movements, we may be able to collect enough data to trace their power source.
Can you estimate the number of jumps it would take?
Dimensional shifting is such an unstable procedure, sir, that I cannot say. Sir, I am finding it difficult to understand many aspects of Ansata conduct. Much of their behavioral norm would be defined by my program as unnecessary and unacceptable.
Mm-hmm. By my program as well, Data.
But if that is so, Captain, why are their methods so often successful? I've been reviewing the history of armed rebellion, and it appears that terrorism is an effective way to promote political change.
Yes, it can be, but I have never subscribed to the theory that political power flows from the barrel of a gun.
Yet there are numerous examples when it was successful. The independence of the Mexican state from Spain, the Irish unification of 2024, and the Kenzie Rebellion.
Yes, I'm aware of them.
Then would it be accurate to say that terrorism is acceptable when all options for peaceful settlement have been foreclosed?
Data, these are questions that mankind has been struggling with throughout history. Your confusion is only human.
If you think about what's happening in that scene, it is bizarre what they're doing.
Yeah.
Data is listing examples where terrorism has changed things, like historical examples where terrorism is. They might as well re-edit it and have him say 9/11. And Picard is sort of recognizing that he is wrong, or that Data is correct, and that Picard, he can't really come up with a good justification as to why they shouldn't be committing terrorist acts.
Right.
And that's like fascinating for this show to go down that path.
Yeah. I was really fascinated that they decided to even touch on that. And it really made me interested in Data's character on a level that I hadn't really considered before, because, excuse me, to this point, the extent of his understanding or misunderstanding of humans is like, I don't understand what jokes are, or what's bingo? I don't understand what turns of phrase mean. But this is the first time that he was like analyzing action purely as a computer mind.
Yes.
And, you know, action that in, as it happens in the real world, is completely, completely subjective.
Yeah.
And has, its outcomes are completely, completely subjective, and its effectiveness is completely, completely subjective. And he was analyzing it as a completely objective robot and
yep.
came down on the side of, well, it makes sense that they're doing this because it's the only thing they have left to do. And historically, this works, so it makes sense and is probably the right course of action for them to take.
Yep.
I thought that was fucking great. They only do it for 30 seconds, but I was like, wow, that's cool.
No, I totally agree. It's such a weird... It's the first time, like you're saying, Data's sort of nature hasn't just been ignorance of humanity's sort of greatness. It's the first time they've really used him to show how some, like, bad things... things that people generally, or not universally, would consider bad can have upside for some person using them, which is which is really, really interesting. And it would have been such a cool episode if they had kept going with that track.
Yeah.
Instead, they decided not to do that. But I agree that I think that's what this script should have been about, and it would have been really interesting.
Yeah, and it also made me think about, you know, you and I had talked off air about I had just watched Star Trek Nemesis. And, you know, which has a lot of Data stuff in it and you know, it's kind of a bland, it's an okay movie, but it's not great.
Yep.
But it started to make me think, like, man, I wish they had done one more Next Generation movie and had Data be the villain.
Yeah.
Because that would have been like, you know, like, it wouldn't have been like, you know, because you could say, well, they have lore, but no, lore is basically Ultron from the Avengers.
Yes, yeah.
Where he's like, he's a robot, but he talks like James Spader and, you know, quips and shit.
Yep.
Data is the kind of robot, and he's not quite the Borg. He's like a Borg who wants to actually understand the way that humans work instead of just destroying them. So it's like the idea of Data going down a certain path because logically in his robot brain he thinks it's the correct one to go on.
Yep.
But he's not dealing with all of these other subjective factors, thus making his, you know, his path the evil, quote unquote evil path to go on.
Yeah.
It would be a really fascinating movie.
No, I agree. It would be a good movie. It's good when the show touches on that aspect of Data. The show seems to forget that Data is an android in a way. There's one episode in season 4, I think, which is one of my favorite Data episodes. It's called Clues. And the premise of it is that the ship gets, everyone on the ship gets knocked unconscious except for Data, right? And they wake up and they're like, Data, what happened? And Data gives them like, you were all unconscious for 15 seconds. We're on our way now. I fixed everything. And over the course of the episode, it becomes obvious that Data is lying to them. And like they can't tell what's gone wrong. And it has these great scenes where Data is sort of blankly staring at people who are asking them, like, why are you lying? What have you done? And he won't tell them. And it's the it's the creepiest Star Trek episode, because it's like you really start to appreciate Data is not human and you don't understand what he's doing.
Right.
Like, it could be really terrifying what he's actually up to.
Well, it's like Ash in the first Alien movie.
Yep.
What he's doing, he's not acting evilly. He's acting the way he's been programmed to act.
Exactly, yeah.
And with Data, I mean, I feel like there's something that's missing from the show now that Pulaski is gone, is that, you know, even slight mistrust of Data. Which, you know, as far as I'm concerned, I think you should probably have a little piece of you that probably mistrusts him a little bit.
Yes.
You know?
Yep. Yeah. That's absolutely true.
Just because it's like, I've used computers, I've used technology. Sometimes that shit breaks.
Right, yeah.
And, you know, so I think it would be safe to have somebody on that crew being like, you know, okay, I trust you, but maybe I'm going to, you know, not sleep with one eye open.
Exactly.
Tonight,
you know? Everyone's asking him every 5 minutes to run a self-diagnostic. Be like, Daddy, you all right? Still, you seem a little bit off.
No, yeah, it would be cool if it was. It would be cool if it was Geordi. I mean, they would at least give him something to do.
Yeah, Data just like brutally strangles Geordi to death or something, and that.
Well,
movie.
not even that, but it's just like, you know, Geordi's the well, actually, O'Brien would be pretty good too. I think it would be O'Brien.
Yeah, yeah, I agree. Yeah, he'd have the more. informal relationship with Data, I suppose would be a good way to put it.
Yeah.
Yeah, but sorry to go off on that Data tangent. We'll get back to High Ground now, but it is interesting. Data is an interesting character in that way, and there will be a lot of episodes in the future where we can touch on that. And this scene, that scene between him and Picard is my favorite scene of the High Ground. You know, I mentioned before I liked their teleport feature. I thought that was a cool attack on the ship that actually makes sense as to why a group of ragtag people could do that. The poor schmuck who gets just lit up by the first woman that beams aboard, and his friend just runs off. That was good. That was excellent.
But that was another thing that I actually really liked, because as I was watching the last one, Hunted, I started thinking, like, why are there no? I mean, Starfleet is just so fucking smug. You know, it's like, yep, they swoop in and it's just like, we're better than you guys. We're going to help you unless we decide we don't like you. And then, you know, prime directive, we can't do anything.
Yep.
I had been kind of thinking as this episode was going on that I've never seen anybody, or it would be nice to see the flip side of how people view Starfleet.
Yeah. Yeah.
And now, this episode isn't primarily about that, but you get a little bit of it.
Yes.
And,
yeah,
you know, in the way that the rebels there, or the lead rebel is, you know, waxing poetic about the Empire or some shit.
But I feel like that was kind of a letdown, because to me, it was never implied that Starfleet knew about this conflict to the extent of what it was.
Yeah.
You know, like, the Finn guy is claiming that Starfleet is, like, propping up this other place. And I never really got that impression. They were giving them medical supplies that they were stealing.
I mean, it's absolutely not. I mean, it's absolutely. Yeah, you're right. They're not choosing a side or anything. But it's, I mean, I can see. I mean, the line of reasoning that the guy takes, which is, oh, well, they're bringing supplies to these guys, not us. So that means they're, you know, that makes sense to me.
Right.
But
yeah,
it doesn't. It's not the direct line of view of Starfleet that I would like to have seen.
I see.
I don't know if that view belongs in this episode.
Right.
But it would be interesting to see at some point. I don't know if they ever get to that.
Yeah, TNG certainly doesn't. Deep Space Nine, it's a major focus of the series. But I mean, yeah, I didn't buy Crusher's thing. I didn't buy Finn's sort of how he's reacting to all this stuff. I didn't buy his actions. I don't understand their conflict. The conflict didn't seem important enough. Although I guess you could say that about real world conflicts where you don't really understand why people are taking these things so seriously.
It just
felt a little bit off. I wish it had been a little bit stronger, although I don't really know what to do. I hate it when TNG gets real preachy, and this felt like a real preachy episode.
Yeah, I think listening to you talk about it has kind of pulled me back down a little bit, because I was just going to say, I found myself watching this episode really enjoying the things they were touching on,
yep,
but felt like the episode itself was like just a regular run-of-the-mill episode. I'm thinking about, it's like, how am I going to rate this? Because I want to rate it like a 4, but in my head I'm thinking about, like, well, what would be like a 4 and 5 episode, or Best of Both Worlds, or the one, the Five Lights episode, which maybe, yep, I can't remember the name of the episode. Those are like, they're just great episodes.
Yeah.
Or, you know, Yesterday's Enterprise. This one is, you know, it doesn't really get there. The ideas are really interesting, but it's just like the content and the way it's presented feels like it's just a regular episode.
Yeah. Yeah. It's tough, although I do have a question for you I wanted to ask you. Since I've been thinking, you just listed off a couple of the, like, what are considered to be the great episodes of Star Trek.
Yep.
I was reviewing sort of various lists of the top Star Trek episodes, or TNG episodes, and you can generally, you generally get a consensus about what the top 5 episodes are. They'd be Yesterday's Enterprise, Best of Both Worlds, Inner Light, Chain of Command, and something like, what the hell would it be? Maybe even the finale, All Good Things.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And what I was wondering about them is that, tell me if I'm wrong, the episodes that are generally considered to be the best have sort of huge ramifications attached to them. And I don't know if people are responding to the severity of the event or whether the episode is good. Does that make any sense?
Yeah. I honestly can't say because it's been so long since I've seen most of those.
Yep.
You know, if you ask me again when we get to them, I can probably give you a better answer. But for me, I know that I think the most... The thing that... I may have said this before, but the thing that makes stories great, especially when it comes to TV and long form, you know, kind of serialized, well, not, you know, episodic television.
Yep.
And serialized television is consequences.
Mm-hmm.
Because, I mean, that's why, you know, Breaking Bad is so good. I mean, on top of everything else that's good about these shows, that's why Breaking Bad is so good. That's why Game of Thrones is so good, is because the actions that characters take have consequences to them, and it's not necessarily just going back to the status quo at the end of every episode.
Sure.
And, you know, with a show like this where you've got 25 episodes a season?
26.
20, Jesus. 26 episodes a season where, for the most part, nothing really changes.
Yep.
When you finally get an episode that shakes everything up, those are the ones that are going to stick with you because they are, you know, the actions, the stuff that happens in them has an effect moving forward.
Yeah. No, I do think that's true. Yeah. And that's certainly true of all the episodes that are generally considered the best. They're all events that sort of impact the show for the rest of the show.
Yeah. But at the same time, I do think it's not mutually exclusive. I think you can do an episode that's just a really good, clever episode, like the episode where the ship keeps blowing up and they get stuck in a time loop.
Yep.
That's one of my favorite episodes, and that doesn't really change anything.
Right, yep.
It's just, you know, it's just an interesting episode. So, you know, I think, but those episodes specifically in that top five are all consequences-based episodes.
Yeah, yep. No, yeah, I think I agree with you. It's just, it was interesting is that as I was moving into considering what to think about them, I was wondering because maybe it's just going back on these episodes. Like when I'm watching them and then I talk to other people who aren't particularly watching them in order, they're sort of surprised by some episodes that I consider to be really good that they would never have considered really good. And I don't know if that's because they're remembering the bigger episodes and in their mind, the bigger episode is one that's better. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
I can certainly understand why all the big episodes are good. It's hard once you get to the, if you were to take like a very run of the mill TNG episode, like Cause and Effect, what you said, the ship blowing up one is one of my favorite. I think that's one of the 10 best episodes of the series, but it's not big, you know?
Right. Right.
So I feel the same way, but I could say about Survivor. So we just watched it's a very small episode, but it's one of my favorites and I think it's very good. So it's a weird sort of dichotomy, I guess.
And I mean, The Defector. I think The Defector is a great episode, and that doesn't really.
Yep, same thing.
Yeah, it doesn't really have that kind of stuff. And I, you know, as I was thinking about it, yesterday's Enterprise isn't really a consequences episode in and of itself, but it is because of what happened in the past.
It's
because Tasha Yar dies in the first season. That's why that episode works.
Yes, it's sort of a rewrite consequence. They've rewritten the show basically at that point.
Yeah,
which is fascinating. We're going to get to that very soon. But yeah, do you have anything else you want to say about High Ground?
Not really. I think we covered everything.
Yeah, it's a little bit bland, but I guess we'll get to that in our final review. I'm going to play an audio.
Oh, go ahead.
Oh,
sorry. The only thing I was going to say is their plan to blow up the engine room was kind of lame. It seemed like they just transported in there and like licked the back of a bomb and stuck it like suction cupped it to the thing.
I like we had the we were laughing about Geordi's like doublet line from the last episode. And this one he does not seem to really do his job a service. He's like, it's just kind of it's kind of stuck there. He just said it was stuck there. It was like, Jordy, I need a more engineering response about what this fucking thing is doing on the warp core.
And we were also talking last episode about the lack of expediency or speed that sometimes they approach these life and death things with. When Jordy goes to deal with that bomb, he like slowly gets off the ground, kind of stretches a little bit.
He fixes
then
his
he's like,
tunic.
He
fixes his tunic in the middle of a life or death situation. It's like, fuck your goddamn shirt, Jordy. Get over there and get the unsticky glue or whatever he's looking for. Ugh.
And they're like, can you fix it? He's like, I don't know. I need a Phillips head screwdriver. I don't know where I put that thing. maybe I can pry it off with the flathead. I don't know.
The other weird thing about this, it might be Troy.
Oh, sorry. I was just going to say my other favorite part of that scene is when he tells the transporter to lock onto his signal, and Troy's like, what?
No,
and Picard Picard like looks at it, he's like, chill out.
that was my question. I think that's Troy's only line. And Jordy goes, lock onto my signal, beam it off on my signal. And Troy goes, his signal. And it was like, bitch, whose signal are you going to... Like, he's down there with the bomb. Why would anyone else tell the transporter when to beam the thing off?
So even Troy doesn't know how that shit works. Because, I mean, I didn't realize it was locking onto the pin.
Yeah, it was locking onto his... did he put his communicator or did he put the tool on top
of it? He puts his communicator on top of the bomb.
Okay.
So yeah. I didn't realize when they lock onto your signal, they're locking onto your communicator. I did not know that.
Oh, but, that might be the first time, yeah.
She has that other scene where she's talking to Wesley.
I'm sorry. She does.
I also love that scene because of the way that Picard was like, they probably won't kill her. They're going to need her as a bargaining chip. It reminded me of that scene in Naked Gun when Leslie Nielsen's telling O.J. Simpson's wife about all of the horrible things that could have happened or something.
It was still, they didn't react to it. It was, I don't think the line is supposed to be intentionally cold, but it comes off that way. It's just like, they won't kill her. They might torture and rape her, but they're definitely not going to kill her. It was a very weird thing to be talking about.
There was one more weird Picard insert that felt very strange because he's not even in the shot when it starts. Is when Data, Geordi, and Wesley are talking about the transdimensional teleport thing.
Yep.
And, like, in the middle of... You know, they do, like, a wide shot, and Picard is not in that scene, I don't think. Mm-hmm. And then they go in close on Data as Data is explaining what's going on, and Picard just walks up behind him and kind of nods along, like he's, like, understands what's going on. And then he enters, he's like, yeah, so we should probably do that. And we'll just look that up.
We'll get that.
It's really weird.
Get that out of there. Was this the podcast we talked about, or did we mention Picard's sort of impotence last episode? Did we bring that?
That was last episode.
No, but it definitely sort of continues here. He's really pushed to the backside of anything that's going on here. Even Crusher sort of denying him from beaming her up. You know, it's like.
Right, right.
I understand the dramatic tension, but it really comes across sort of oddly.
Yeah. I think that was last episode. Who cares? Whatever.
It doesn't matter.
But it's very strange when they put Picard to the background because, as I was saying, again, either this one or the last one, I feel like they're doing better at using everybody.
Yes.
But in doing that, they have to limit what Picard does.
Yep.
And because, you know, there's only room for so many people. And having Picard be a background character for a story that is pretty, you know, pretty intense, like, if you're just looking at the overall what's happening.
It's a diplomacy episode, you know? Like, he should be... This is all about trying to bring two sides together, and Picard is not particularly interested in doing any such thing.
Yeah, yeah.
Which is odd.
Yeah, it is odd, and he's... He's interested in jumping over the end table to slug somebody in the chin.
That's right.
And like, why? That's another thing. Like, why did they need to bring him down to the cave? I don't know. Whatever.
Just to talk to
Beverly.
It's very
weird,
right?
For him. Yeah, it's a very weird episode for Picard.
It is. Well, yeah, I think that's wrapped up pretty much everything. But I'm going to play an audio clip, And we're going to come back, me and Clay, we're going to come back and we're going to talk about our rating for The High Ground.
Finn. He's dead.
You didn't have to kill him.
As a prisoner, he would have been a focus for violence. As his followers tried to free him. Now he's a martyr. But the death toll might go down, at least in the short term. It's an imperfect solution for an imperfect world.
Riker!
No more killing. Already another one to take his place. It never ends.
He could have killed you. He didn't. Maybe the end begins with one boy putting down his gun.
Okay, Clay, High Ground. What are you going to give this bad boy? Did I talk you out of your four or whatever you were?
Yeah, you did. Okay. I have to give like a conditional asterisk-based rating for this one, I think. Cause
sure.
Based on the ideas that they're presenting and some of the more interesting aspects that I personally latched onto, I would give it a 4.
Yep.
But if I were to take a step back and look at the episode as a whole, I would probably say, I mean, I can't give it a 2 because I don't think it's that bad. I think it's a very watchable episode. But I would say it's a 3.
Okay. I'm going to stick to my guns. You almost talked me into upping it. I am going to give this a 1. I think this is the weakest episode of the third season so far.
Wow, okay. Wait, hold on.
Sure.
More than the one where he eviscerates the lady with the phaser at the end.
That's
come on.
That one might actually be worse. But I think I gave that a 2. Did I give that a 2? That probably.
Well, if you did, you were wrong.
You know. The problem here with giving this one a
you're doing a reverse thing that you do with the fives, Wes.
That's
you're voting with your heart, not your head.
All right, I'm gonna put my head into this. I'll explain. I think this episode is fairly atrocious, except for the fact that we mentioned the Data Picard scene, which is what they were trying to do. The vengeance factor. The vengeance factor
bad.
in a weird way is bad, but I feel it's more watchable than this episode. That's kind of my dividing line. Like, this was an episode that my wife walked out of halfway through. So it's like, my scale, if people don't know, my scale is really sort of a more complicated version of should you watch this or would you not watch it? And I think this is an unwatchable episode that maybe could have been fixed. I'm gonna give it a 2. I'm gonna go with a 2, and I think I'm happy with a 2. If it's a very weak 2, so that's my final answer. I'm gonna go with a 2. You're gonna stick with a 3?
Yeah, I mean, I feel like I have to. If I'm looking at it, if I can still factor in the things that I did like about it.
Yeah, absolutely.
I would say that's what brings it to a 3, because like I said, I think that kind of explains my thought process about, you know, looking at it as something interesting but being stuck in a kind of crummy episode shell.
Yeah.
I think that rounds out to, it's probably a 2 but has enough interesting ideas in it to bring it up to like a 3 for me.
Interesting. Okay, yeah. I'm gonna settle my mind. I have to think about this one. I have to go lean dramatically on the wall and look out the window as I think about this. It's either a 1 or 2. I'm gonna let everybody know after I think about it. But
It's a three.
It's a three. 1 + 2 = 3. Anyway, Clay, thank you. Good to have you on.
Thank you for having me back once again.
Everybody, check out Clay's Prisoner podcast. We just finished that one up. We're going to have a couple more episodes left to do with the remake of The Prisoner. You can go to backinthevillage.com to find out all things Prisoner related. And yeah, Clay's going to be here. I think he's going to come back for Yesterday's Enterprise, right? That's in a couple episodes.
Yeah, I feel like I've earned that.
You have. You've been here. You've been here the longest. You can get the first sort of, what's the word? Undeniable classic episode of Star Trek: The Next Generation. not to spoil that for everybody, but yeah, Yesterday's Enterprise.
How many more is that?
Two. There are two episodes after High Ground, and then Yesterday's Enterprise. Two more. Okay. Yep. Cool. We'll talk about when we're going to do that. But thank you again, Clay, and I will see you guys next time with Deja Q.